was once merely a good friend. Now he's part of my family, as much a part as my husband and brother are.
They were perhaps a quarter of the way around the Duca before the Matrax spoke again.
Why have you come here?
Kabarak told me his people needed help,
Leia said simply.
I thought there might be something I could do.
Some will say you have come to sow discord among us.
You said that yourself last night,
Leia reminded her.
I can only give you my word that discord is not my intention.
The Matrak made a long hissing sound that ended with a sharp double click of needle teeth.
The goal and the end are not always the same, Lady Vader. Now we serve one over clan only. You would require service to another. This is the seed of discord and death.
Leia pursed her lips.
Does service to the Empire satisfy you then?
She asked.
Does it gain your people better life or higher honor?
We serve the Empire as one clan,
the Matrak said.
For you to demand our service would be to bring back the conflicts of all.
They had reached the wall chart now, and she gestured a thin hand up toward it.
Do you see our history, Lady Vader?
Leia craned her neck to look. Neatly carved lines of alien script covered the bottom two-thirds of the wall, with each word connected to a dozen others in a bewildering crisscross of vertical, horizontal, and angled lines, each cut seemingly of a different width and depth. Then she got it. The chart was a genealogical tree, either of the entire clan Kimbar, or else just this particular family.
I see it,
she said.
Then you see the terrible destruction of life created by the conflicts of old,
the Matrak said. She gestured to three or four places on the chart, which were, to Leia, indistinguishable from the rest of the design. Reading Nogri genealogies was apparently an acquired skill.
I do not wish to return to those days,
the Matrak continued.
Not even for the daughter of the Lord Darth Vader.
I understand,
Leia said quietly, shivering as the ghosts of Yavin, Hoth, Endor, and 100 more rose up before her.
I've seen more conflict and death in my lifetime than I ever thought possible. I have no wish to add to the list.
Then you must leave,
the Matrak said firmly.
You must leave and not come back while the Empire lives.
They began to walk again.
Is there no alternative?
Leia asked.
What if I could persuade all of your people to leave their service to the Empire? There would be no conflict then among you.
The Emperor aided us when no one else would,
the Matrak reminded her.
That was only because we didn't know about your need,
Leia said, feeling a twinge of conscience at the half-truth. Yes, the Alliance had truly not known about the desperate situation here. And yes, Mon Mothma and the other leaders would certainly have wanted to help if they had. But whether they would have had the resources to actually do anything was another question entirely.
We know now, and we offer you our help.
Do you offer us aid for our own sakes?
The Matrak asked pointedly.
Or merely to wrest our service from the Empire to your overclan? We will not be fought over like a bone among hungry Stava.
The Emperor used you,
Leia said flatly,
as the Grand Admiral uses you now. Has the aid they've given you been worth the sons they've taken from you and sent off to die?
They had gone another 20 steps or so before the Matrak answered.
Our sons have gone,
she said softly.
But with their service, they have bought us life. You came in a flying craft, Lady Veda. You saw what was done to our land.
Yes, Leia said with a shiver. I hadn't realized how widespread the destruction had been.
Life on Honegger has always been a struggle,
the Matrax said.
The land has required much labor to tame. You saw on the history the times when the struggle was lost. But after the battle in the sky...
She shuddered, a peculiar kind of shaking that seemed to move from her hips upward to her shoulders.
It was like a war between gods. We know now that it was only large flying craft high above the land. But then we knew nothing of such things. Mere lightning flashed across the sky, through the night and into the next day, brightening the distant mountains with their fury. And yet, there was no thunder, as if those same gods were too angry even to shout at each other as they fought. I remember being more frightened of the silence than of any other part of it. Only once there was a distant crash like thunder. It was much later before we learned that one of our higher mountains had lost its uppermost peak. Then the lightning stopped, and we dared to hope that the gods had taken their war away from us. Until the ground shake came.
She paused, another shudder running through her.
The lightning had been the anger of the gods. The ground shake was their war hammer. Whole cities vanished as the ground opened up beneath them. Fire mountains that had been long quiet sent out flame and smoke that darkened the sky over all the land. Forests and fields burned, as did cities and villages that survived the ground shake itself. From those who had died came sickness, and still more died after them. It was as if the fury of the sky gods had come among the gods of the land, and they too were fighting among themselves. And then, when finally we dared to hope it was over, the strange smelling rain began to fall.
Leia nodded, the whole sequence of events painfully clear. One of the warring ships had crashed, setting off massive earthquakes and releasing toxic chemicals which had been carried by wind and rain to every part of the planet. There were any number of such chemicals in use aboard a modern warship, but it was only the older ships that carried anything as virulent as this chemical must have been. Older ships, which had been virtually all the Rebel Alliance had had to fight with in the beginning. A fresh surge of guilt twisted like a blade in her stomach. We did this, she thought miserably. Our ship. Our fault. Was it the rain that killed the plants?
The Empire's people had a name for what was in the rain,
the Matrax said.
I do not know what it was.
They came soon after the disaster, then? The Lord Vader and the others?
Yes.
The Matrax waved her hands to encompass the area around them.
We had gathered together here, all who were left alive and could make the journey. This place had always been a truce ground between clans. We had come here to try to find a way for survival. It was here that the Lord Vader found us.
They walked in silence for another minute.
Some believed then that he was a god,
the Matrax said.
All feared him, and the mighty silver flying craft that had brought him and his attendants from the sky. But even amid the fear, there was anger at what the gods had done to us, and nearly 2/10 of warriors chose to attack.
And were duly slaughtered,
Leia said grimly. The thought of effectively unarmed primitives taking on Imperial troops made her wince.
They were not slaughtered,
the Matrax retorted, and there was no mistaking the pride in her voice.
Only 3 of the 2/10 died in the battle. In turn, they killed many of the Lord Vader's attendants, despite their lightning weapons and rock garments. It was only when the Lord Vader himself intervened that the warriors were defeated. But instead of destroying us, as some of the attendants counseled, he instead offered us peace. Peace, and the blessing and aid of the Emperor.
Leia nodded, one more piece of the puzzle falling into place. She had wondered why the Emperor would have bothered with what to him would have been nothing more than a tiny group of primitive non-humans. But primitive non-humans with that kind of natural fighting skill were something else entirely.
What sort of aid did he bring?
All that we needed,
the Matrax said.
Food and medicine and tools came at once. Later, when the strange rain began to kill our crops, he sent the metal droids to begin cleaning the poison from our land.
Leia winced, freshly aware of her twin's vulnerability. But the analysis kit had found no trace of anything toxic in the air as they approached the village, and Chewbacca and Kabarak had done similar tests on the soil. Whatever it was that had been in the rain, the decon droids had done a good job of getting rid of it.
And still nothing will grow outside the cleaned land?
Only the colm grass,
the Matrax said.
It is a poor plant of no use as a food. But it alone can grow now, and even it no longer smells as it once did.
Which explained the uniform brown color that she and Chewbacca had seen from space. Somehow that particular plant had adapted to the toxic soil.
Did any of the animals survive?
She asked.
Some did. Those who could eat the colm grass, and those which in turn ate them. But they are few.
The Matrax lifted her head, as if looking in her mind's eye toward the distant hills.
This place was never rich with life, Lady Vader. Perhaps that was why the clans had chosen it as a truce ground. But even in so desolate a place, there were still animals and plants without count. They are gone now.
She straightened up, visibly putting the memory behind her.
The Lord Vader helped us in other ways as well. He sent attendants to teach our sons and daughters the ways and customs of the Empire. He issued new orders to allow all clans to share the clean land. Though for all clans to live beside one another this way had never happened since the beginning.
She gestured around her.
And he sent mighty flying craft into the desolation to find and bring to us our clan Dukas.
She turned her dark eyes to gaze at Leia.
We have an honorable peace, Lady Vader. Whatever the cost, we pay it gladly.
Across the room, the children had apparently finished their lesson and were getting to their feet. One of them spoke to 3PO, making a sort of truncated version of their face-down bow. The droid replied, and the whole group turned and headed for the door, where two adults awaited them.
Break time?
Leia asked.
The clan lessons are over for today,
the Matrax said.
The children must now begin their share of the work of the village. Later in the evening, they will have the lessons which will equip them to someday serve the Empire.
Leia shook her head.
It's not right,
she told the Matrax as the children filed out of the Dooka.
No people should have to sell their children in return for life.
The Matrax gave a long hiss.
It is the debt we owe,
she said.
How else shall we pay it?
Leia squeezed her thumb and forefinger together.
How else indeed?
Clearly the Empire was quite happy with the bargain it had made, and having seen the Nogri commandos in action, she could well understand its satisfaction. They wouldn't be interested in letting the Nogri buy out of their debt in any other way. And if the Nogri themselves considered their service to be a debt of honor to their saviors...
I don't know,
she had to concede. A movement to the side caught her attention. Kabarak, still sitting on the floor across the room, had fallen over onto his side, with Chewbacca's hand engulfing his wrist. It looked like fighting, except that Chewbacca's sense didn't indicate anger.
What are they doing over there?
She asked.
Your Wookiee has asked my third son to instruct him in our fighting methods,
the Matrax answered, pride again touching her voice.
Wookiees have great strength, but no knowledge of subtlety of combat.
It was probably not an assessment the Wookiees themselves would have agreed with, but Leia had to admit that Chewbacca, at least, had always seemed to rely mainly on brute force and bowcaster accuracy.
I'm surprised he was willing to have Kabarak teach him, she said. He's never really trusted him.
Perhaps it is that same distrust that whets his interest,
the Matrax said dryly. Leia had to smile.
Perhaps.
For a minute they watched in silence, as Kabarak showed Chewbacca two more wrist and arm locks. They seemed to be variants of techniques Leia had learned in her youth on Alderaan, and she shivered once at the thought of those moves with Wookiee muscle behind them.
You understand the cycle of our life now, Lady Vader,
the Matrix said quietly.
You must realize that we still hang by spider silk. Even now, we do not have enough clean land to grow sufficient food. We must continue to buy from the Empire.
Payment for which requires that much more service from your sons.
Leia nodded, grimacing. Permanent debt. The oldest form of covert slavery in the galaxy.
It also encourages the sending away of our sons,
the Matrax added bitterly.
Even if the Empire allowed it, we could not now bring all our sons home. We would not have food for them.
Leia nodded again. It was as neat and tidy a box as she'd ever seen anyone trapped in. She should have expected no less from Vader and the Emperor.
You'll never be entirely out of their debt,
she told the Matrax bluntly.
You know that, don't you? As long as you're useful to them, the Grand Admiral will make sure of that.
Yes,
the Matrax said softly.
It has taken a long time, but I now believe that. If all Nogri believed so, changes could perhaps be made.
But the rest of the Nogri still believe the Empire is their friend?
Not all believe so, but enough.
She stopped and gestured upward.
Do you see the starlight, Lady Vader?
Leia looked up at the concave dish that hung 4 meters off the ground at the intersection of the wall support chains. About a meter and a half across, It was composed of some kind of black or blackened metal and perforated with hundreds of tiny pinholes, with the light from the inside rim of the dish winking through like stars. The whole effect was remarkably like a stylized version of the night sky.
I see it.
The Nogri have always loved the stars,
the Matrax said, her voice distant and reflective.
Once, long ago, we worshipped them. Even after we knew what they were, they remained our friends. There were many among us who would have gladly gone with the Lord Vader, even without our debt, for the joy of traveling among them.
I understand, Leia murmured. Many in the galaxy feel the same way. It's the common birthright of us all.
The birthright which we have now lost.
Not lost, Leia said, dropping her gaze from the star dish. Only misplaced.
She looked over at Kabarak and Chewbacca.
Perhaps if I talked to all the Nogri leaders at once...
What would you say to them?
The Matrak countered. Leia bit at her lip. What would she say? That the Empire was using them, but the Nogri perceived it as a debt of honor? That the Empire was pacing the cleanup job so as to keep them on the edge of self-sufficiency without ever reaching it? But at the rate the decontamination was going, she would be hard-pressed to prove any such lagging, even to herself. That she and the New Republic could give the Nogri back their birthright? But why should they believe her?
As you see, Lady Vader,
the Matrax said into the silence.
Perhaps matters will someday change. But until then, your presence here is a danger to us as much as to you. I will honor the pledge of protection made by my third son and not reveal your presence to our lord, the Grand Admiral. But you must leave.
Leia took a deep breath.
Yes,
she said, the word hurting her throat. She'd had such hopes for her diplomatic and Jedi skills here. Hopes that those skills, plus the accident of her lineage, would enable her to sweep the Nogri out from under the Empire's fist and bring them over to the New Republic. And now the contest was over, almost before it had even begun.
What in space was I thinking about when I came here?
She wondered bleakly.
I will leave, she said aloud, because I don't wish to bring trouble to you or your family. But the day will come, Matrak, when your people will see for themselves what the Empire is doing to them. When that happens, remember that I'll always be ready to assist you.
The Matrak bowed low.
Perhaps that day will come soon, Lady Vader. I await it, as do others.
Leia nodded, forcing a smile, over before it had begun.
Then we must make arrangements to...
She broke off, as across the room, the double doors flew open, and one of the child door wardens stumbled inside.
Matrak!
He all but squealed.
Mirakasuki! Karamani Karaka!
Kabarak was on his feet in an instant. Out of the corner of her eye, Leia saw 3PO stiffen.
What is it?
She demanded.
It is the flying craft of our lord, the Grand Admiral,
the Matrak said, her face and voice suddenly very tired and very alien.
And it is coming here.
Chapter 13.
For a single heartbeat, Leia stared at the Matrak, her muscles frozen with shock, her mind skidding against the idea as if walking on ice.
No, it couldn't be. It couldn't. The Grand Admiral had been here just last night. Surely he wouldn't be coming back again. Not so soon.
And then, in the distance, she heard the faint sound of approaching repulsor lifts, and the paralysis vanished.
We've got to get out of here, she said. Chewie?
There is no time,
Kabarak called, sprinting toward them with Chewbacca right on his heels.
The shuttle must already be in sight beneath the clouds.
Leia looked quickly around the room, silently cursing her moment of indecision. No windows, no other doors, no cover except the small booth that faced the wall genealogy chart from across the Dooka. No way out.
Are you certain he's coming here?
Leia asked Kabarak, realizing as she spoke that the question was a waste of breath.
Here to the Dooka, I mean.
Where else would he come?
Kabarak countered, darkly his eyes on the Matrak.
Perhaps he was not fooled as we thought.
Leia looked around the Dooka again. If the shuttle landed by the double doors, there would be a few seconds before the Imperials entered when the rear of the building would be out of their view. If she used those seconds to cut them an escape hole with her lightsaber... Chewbacca's growled suggestion echoed her own train of thought.
Yes, but cutting a hole isn't the problem, she pointed out. It's how to seal it up afterward.
The Wookiee growled again, jabbing a massive hand toward the booth.
Well, it'll hide the hole from the inside anyway,
Leia agreed doubtfully.
I suppose that's better than nothing.
She looked at the Matrak, suddenly aware that slicing away part of their ancient clan Dooka might well qualify as sacrilege.
Matrak,
if it must be done, then be it so.
The Nogri cut her off harshly. She was still in shock herself. But even as Leia watched, she visibly drew herself together again.
You must not be found here.
Leia bit at the inside of her lip. She'd seen that same expression several times on Kabarak's face during the trip from Endor. It was a look she'd come to interpret as regret for his decision to bring her to his home.
We'll be as neat as possible,
she assured the Matrak, pulling her lightsaber from her belt.
And as soon as the Grand Admiral is gone, Kabarak can get his ship back and take us away and...
She broke off as Chewbacca snarled for silence.
Faintly in the distance, they could hear the sound of the approaching shuttle. And then suddenly, another all-too-familiar whine shot past the Dooka. Scimitar assault bombers,
Leia breathed, hearing in the whine the crumbling of her impromptu plan. With Imperial bombers flying cover overhead, it would be impossible for them to sneak out of the Dooka without being spotted. Which left them only one option.
We'll have to hide in the booth,
she told Chewbacca, doing a quick estimation of its size as she hurried toward it. If the slanting roof that sloped upward from the front edge back to the Dooka wall wasn't just for show, there should be barely enough room for both her and Chewbacca inside.
Will you want me in there as well, Your Highness?
Leia skidded to a halt, spinning around in shock and chagrin. Threepio, she'd forgotten all about him.
There will not be enough room,
the Matrak hissed.
Your presence here has betrayed us, Lady Vader.
Quiet,
Leia snapped, throwing another desperate look around the Dooka. But there was still no other place to hide. Unless... She looked at the star dish hanging over the middle of the room.
We'll have to put him up there,
she told Chewbacca, pointing to it.
Do you think you can...
There was no need to finish the question. Chewbacca had already grabbed 3PO and was heading at top speed toward the nearest of the tree trunk pillars, throwing the frantically protesting droid over his shoulder as he ran. The Wookiee leaped upward at the pillar from 2 meters out, his hidden climbing claws anchoring him solidly to the wood. Three quick pulls got him to the top of the wall, and with the half-hysterical droid balanced precariously, he began to race hand over hand along the chain.
Quiet, 3PO!
Leia called to him from the booth door, giving the interior a quick look. The ceiling did indeed follow the slanting roof, giving the back of the booth considerably more height than the front, and there was a low bench-like seat across the back wall. A tight fit, but they should make it.
Better yet shut down. They may have sensors going,
she added. Though if they did, the whole game was over already. Listening to the approaching whine of repulsor lifts, she could only hope that after the negative sensor scan from the previous night, they wouldn't bother doing another one. Chewbacca had reached the center now, pulling himself partway up on the chain with one hand. He unceremoniously dumped 3PO into the star dish. The droid gave one last screech of protest, a screech that broke off halfway through as the Wookiee reached into the dish and shut him off.
Help!
Dropping back to the floor with a thud, he hit the ground running as the repulsor lifts outside went silent.
Hurry!
Leia hissed, holding the door open for him. Chewbacca made it across the Dooka and dived through the narrow opening, jumping up on the bench and turning around to face forward. his head jammed up against the sloping ceiling and his legs spread to both sides of the bench. Leia slid in behind him, sitting down in the narrow gap between the Wookiee's legs. There was just enough time to ease the door closed before the double doors a quarter of the way around the Dooka slammed open. Leia pressed against the back wall of the booth and Chewbacca's legs, forcing herself to breathe slowly and quietly, and running through the Jedi sensory enhancement techniques Luke had taught her. From above her, Chewbacca's breathing rasped in her ears, the heat from his body flowing like an invisible waterfall onto her head and shoulders. She was suddenly and acutely aware of the weight and bulge of her belly, and of the small movements of the twins within it, of the hardness of the bench she was sitting on, of the intermingling smells of Wookiee hair, the alien wood around her, and her own sweat. Behind her, through the wall of the Dooka, she could hear the sound of purposeful footsteps and the occasional clink of laser rifles against stormtrooper armor, and said silent thanks that they'd scrubbed their earlier plan of trying to escape that way. And from the inside of the Dooka, she could hear voices.
"Good morning, Matrak," a calm, coolly modulated voice said. "I see that your third son, Kabarak, is here with you. How very convenient."
Leia shivered, the rough rubbing of her tunic against her skin horribly loud in her ears. That voice had the unmistakable tone of an Imperial commander, but with a calmness and sheer weight of authority behind it, an authority that surpassed even the smug condescension she'd faced from Governor Tarkin aboard the Death Star. It could only be the Grand Admiral.
"I greet you, my lord,"
the Matrak's voice mewed, her own tone rigidly controlled.
"We are honored by your visit."
"Thank you," the Grand Admiral said, his tone still polite, but with a new edge of steel beneath it. "And you, Kabarak Clan Kimbar, are you also pleased at my presence here?"
Slowly, carefully, Leia eased her head to the right, hoping to get a look at the newcomer through the dark mesh of the booth window. No good. They were all still over by the double doors, and she didn't dare get her face too close to the mesh. But even as she eased back to her previous position, there was the sound of measured footsteps. And a moment later, in the center of the Dooka, the Grand Admiral came into view. Leia stared at him through the mesh, an icy chill running straight through her. She'd heard Han's description of the man he'd seen on Merkur. The pale blue skin, the glowing red eyes, the white Imperial uniform. She'd heard, too, Phalia's casual dismissal of the man as an imposter, or at best a self-promoted moth. And she'd wondered privately if Han might indeed have been mistaken. She knew now that he hadn't been.
"Of course, my lord,"
Kabarak answered the Grand Admiral's question.
"Why should I not be? Do you speak to your lord, the Grand Admiral, in such a tone?"
an unfamiliar Nogri voice demanded.
"I apologize,"
Kabarak said.
"I did not mean disrespect."
Leia winced. Undoubtedly not, but the damage was already done. Even with her relative inexperience of the subtleties of Nogri speech, the words had sounded too quick and too defensive. To the Grand Admiral, who knew this race far better than she did.
"What then did you mean?"
the Grand Admiral asked, turning around to face Kabarak and the Matrak.
"I..."
Kabarak floundered. The Grand Admiral stood silently, waiting.
"I am sorry, my lord,"
Kabarak finally got out.
"I was overawed by your visit to our simple village."
"An obvious excuse," the Grand Admiral said. "Possibly even a believable one. Except that you weren't overawed by my visit last night." He cocked an eyebrow. "Or is it that you didn't expect to face me again so soon?"
"My lord..."
"What is the Nogri penalty for lying to the lord of your overclan?"
the Grand Admiral interrupted, his cool voice suddenly harsh.
"Is it death, as it was in the old days? Or do the Nogri no longer prize such outdated concepts as honor?"
"My lord has no right to bring such accusations against a son of the clan, Kimbar,"
the Matrak spoke up stiffly. The Grand Admiral shifted his gaze slightly.
You would be well advised to keep your counsel to yourself, Matrak. This particular son of the clan Kimbar has lied to me, and I do not take such matters lightly.
The glowing gaze shifted back.
Tell me, Kabarak, Clan Kimbar, about your imprisonment on Kashyyyk.
Leia squeezed her lightsaber hard, the cool metal ridges of the grip biting into the palm of her hand. It had been during Kabarak's brief imprisonment on Kashyyyk that he'd been persuaded to bring her to Honegger. If Kabarak blurted out the whole story...
I do not understand,
Kabarak said.
Really?
The Grand Admiral countered.
Then allow me to refresh your memory. You didn't escape from Kashyyyk as you stated in your report, and repeated last night in my presence, and in the presence of your family, and your clan dynast. You were, in fact, captured by the Wookiees after the failure of your mission. And you spent that missing month not meditating, but undergoing interrogation in a Wookiee prison. Does that help your memory any?
Leia took a careful breath, not daring to believe what she was hearing. However it was that the Grand Admiral had learned about Kabarak's capture, he'd taken that fact and run in exactly the wrong direction with it. They'd been given a second chance. If Kabarak could hold on to his wits and poise a little longer. Perhaps the Matrak didn't trust his stamina either.
My third son would not lie about such matters, my lord,
she said before Kabarak could reply.
He has always understood the duties and requirements of honor.
Has he now? The Grand Admiral shot back. A Nogri commando, captured by the enemy for interrogation, and still alive? Is this the duty and requirement of honor?
I was not captured, my lord,
Kabarak said stiffly.
My escape from Kashyyyk was as I said it.
For half a dozen heartbeats, the Grand Admiral gazed in his direction in silence.
And I say that you lie, Kabarak Clan Kimbar, he said softly. But no matter. With or without your cooperation, I will have the truth about your missing month, and whatever the price was paid for your freedom. Rook?
My lord,
the third Nogri voice said.
Kabarak Clan Kimbar is hereby placed under Imperial arrest. You and Squad 2 will escort him aboard the troop shuttle and take him back to the Chimera for interrogation.
There was a sharp hiss.
My lord, this is a violation.
You will be silent, Matrak, the Grand Admiral cut her off, or you will share in his imprisonment.
I will not be silent,
the Matrak snarled.
A Nogri accused of treason to the other clan must be given over to the clan dynasts for the ancient rules of discovery and judgment. It is the law.
I am not bound by Nogri law, the Grand Admiral said coldly. Kabarak has been a traitor to the Empire. By Imperial rules will he be judged and condemned.
The clan dynasts will demand...
The clan dynasts are in no position to demand anything,
the Grand Admiral barked, touching the comlink cylinder pocketed beside his tunic insignia.
Do you require a reminder of what it means to defy the Empire?
Leia heard the faint sound of the Matrak's sigh.
No, my lord,
she said, her voice conceding defeat. The Grand Admiral studied her.
You shall have one, anyway.
He touched his comlink again, and abruptly, the interior of the Dooka flashed with a blinding burst of green light. Leia jerked her head back into Chewbacca's legs, squeezing her eyelids shut against the sudden searing pain ripping through her eyes and face. For a single horrifying second, she thought that the Dooka had taken a direct hit, a turbo laser blast powerful enough to bring the whole structure down in flaming ruin around them. But the afterimage burned into her retina showed the Grand Admiral still standing proud and unmoved. And belatedly, she understood. She was trying desperately to reverse her sensory enhancement when the thunderclap slammed like the slap of an angry Wookiee into the side of her head. She would later have a vague recollection of several more turbo laser blasts seen and heard only dimly through the thick gray haze that clouded over her mind. The orbiting Star Destroyer fired again and again into the hills surrounding the village. By the time her throbbing head finally dragged her back to full consciousness, the Grand Admiral's reminder was over. The final thunderclap roiling away into the distance. Cautiously, she opened her eyes, squinting a little against the pain. The Grand Admiral was still standing where he'd been, in the center of the Duca. And as the last thunderclap faded into silence, he spoke.
"I am the law on Honegger now, Meetrak," he said, his voice quiet and deadly. "If I choose to follow the ancient laws, I will follow them. If I choose to ignore them, they will be ignored. Is that clear?"
The voice, when it came, was almost too alien to recognize. If the purpose of the Grand Admiral's demonstration had been to frighten the Maitrak half out of her mind, it had clearly succeeded.
"Yes, my lord."
"Good."
The Grand Admiral let the brittle silence hang in the air for another moment.
"For loyal servants of the Empire, however, I am prepared to make compromises. Kabarak will be interrogated aboard the Chimera. But before that, I will allow the first stage of the ancient laws of discovery."
His head turned slightly.
"Rook, you will remove Kabarak Clan Kimbar to the center of Nesteo and present him to the Clan Dynasts. Perhaps 3 days of public shaming will serve to remind the Nogri people that we are still at war."
"Yes, my lord."
There was the sound of footsteps and the opening and closing of the double doors. Hunched against the ceiling above her, his sense in unreadable turmoil, Chewbacca rumbled softly to himself. Leia clenched her teeth hard enough to send flashes of pain through her still throbbing head. Public shaming, and something called the Laws of Discovery. The Rebel Alliance had unwittingly destroyed Honegger. Now it seemed she was going to do the same to Kabarak. The Grand Admiral was still standing in the middle of the Duca.
"You're very quiet, Maitrak," he said.
"My lord has ordered me to be silent,"
she countered.
"Of course," he studied her. "Loyalty to one's clan and family is all well and good, Maitrak. But to extend that loyalty to a traitor would be foolish, as well as potentially disastrous to your family and clan."
"I have not heard evidence that my third son is a traitor."
The Grand Admiral's lip twitched.
"You will,"
he promised softly. He walked toward the double doors, passing out of Leia's sight, and there was the sound of the doors opening. The footsteps paused, clearly waiting, and a moment later the quieter paces of the Maitrak joined him. Both left, the doors closed again, and Leia and Chewbacca were alone. Alone, in enemy territory, without a ship, and with their only ally about to undergo an Imperial interrogation.
"I think, Chewie," she said softly, "we're in trouble."
Chapter 14.
One of the first minor truths about interstellar flight that any observant traveler learned was that a planet seen from space almost never looked anything at all like the official maps of it. Scatterings of cloud cover, shadows from mountain ranges, contour-altering effects of large vegetation tracts, and lighting tricks in general, all combine to disguise and distort the nice, clean, computer-scrubbed lines drawn by the cartographers. It was an effect that had probably caused a lot of bad moments for neophyte navigators, as well as supplying the ammunition for innumerable practical jokes played on those same neophytes by their more experienced shipmates. It was therefore something of a surprise to find that, on this particular day, and coming in from this particular angle, the major continent of the planet Jomark did indeed look almost exactly like a precisely detailed map. Of course, in all fairness, it was a pretty small continent to begin with. Somewhere on that picture-perfect continent was a Jedi Master. Luke tapped his fingers gently on the edge of his control board, gazing out at the greenish-brown chunk of land now framed in his X-Wing's canopy. He could sense the other Jedi's presence. Had been able to sense it, in fact, since first dropping out of hyperspace. but so far he'd been unable to make a more direct contact. Master Sabaoth? He called silently, trying one more time. This is Luke Skywalker. Can you hear me? There was no response. Either Luke wasn't doing it right, or Sabaoth was unable to reply. Or else this was a deliberate test of Luke's abilities. Well, he was game. Let's do a sensor focus on the main continent, R2, he called, looking over his displays and trying to put himself into the frame of mind of a Jedi master who'd been out of circulation for a while. The bulk of Jomark's land area was in that one small continent. Not much more than an oversized island, really. But there were also thousands of much smaller islands scattered in clusters around the vast ocean. Taken altogether, there were probably close to 300,000 square kilometers of dry land, which made for an awful lot of places to guess wrong. Scan for technology, and see if you can pick out the main population centers. R2 whistled softly to himself as he ran the X-Wing sensor readings through his programmed lifeform algorithms. He gave a series of beeps, and a pattern of dots appeared superimposed on the scope image. Thanks, Luke said, studying it. Not surprisingly, most of the population seemed to be living along the coast, but there were a handful of other smaller centers in the interior as well, including what seemed to be a cluster of villages near the southern shore of an almost perfectly ring-shaped lake. He frowned at that image, keyed for a contour overlay. It wasn't just an ordinary lake he saw now, but one that had formed inside what was left of a cone-shaped mountain, with a smaller cone making a large island in the center. Probably volcanic in origin, given the mountainous terrain around it. A wilderness region thick with mountains, where a Jedi Master could have lived in privacy for a long time. And a cluster of villages nearby, where he could have emerged from his isolation when he was finally ready to do so. It was as good a place to start as any. Okay, R2, here's the landing target, he told the droid, marking it on his scope. I'll take us down. You watch the sensors and let me know if you spot anything interesting. R2 beeped a somewhat nervous question. Yes, or anything suspicious, Luke agreed. R2 had never fully believed that the Imperial attack on them the last time they'd tried to come here had been purely coincidence. They dropped in through the atmosphere, switching to repulsor lifts about halfway down and leveling off just below the tops of the highest mountains. Seen up close, the territory was rugged enough, but not nearly as desolate as Luke had first thought. Vegetation was rich down in the valley areas between mountains, though it was sparse on the rocky sides of the mountains themselves. Most of the gaps they flew over seemed to have at least a couple of houses nestled into them, and occasionally even a village that had been too small for the X-Wing's limited sensors to notice. They were coming up on the lake from the southwest when R2 spotted the mansion perched up on the rim. Never seen a design like that before, Luke commented. You getting any life readings from it? R2 warbled a moment. Inconclusive. Well, let's give it a try, Luke decided, keying in the landing cycle. If we're wrong, at least it'll be a downhill walk to everywhere else. The mansion was set into a small courtyard bordered by a fence that appeared more suited for decoration than defense. Killing the X-Wing's forward velocity, he swung the ship parallel to the fence and set it down a few meters outside its single gate. He was in the process of shutting down the systems when R2's trilled warning made him look up again. Standing just outside the gate, watching them, was the figure of a man. Luke gazed at him, heart starting to beat a little harder. The man was old, obviously. The gray-white hair and long beard that the mountain winds were blowing half across his lined face were evidence enough of that. But his eyes were keenly alert, his posture straight and proud and unaffected by even the harder gusts of wind. And the half-open brown robe revealed a chest that was strongly muscled. Finish shutting down, R2, Luke said, hearing the slight quaver in his voice as he slipped off his helmet and popped the X-Wing's canopy. Standing up, he vaulted lightly over the cockpit side to the ground. The old man hadn't moved. Taking a deep breath, Luke walked over to him.
Master Sabaoth, he said, bowing his head slightly. I'm Luke Skywalker.
The other smiled faintly.
Yes,
he said.
I know. Welcome to Jomark.
Thank you,
Luke said, letting his breath out in a quiet sigh. At last. It had been a long and circuitous journey. What with the unscheduled stopovers at Merkur and Sluis Van. But at last, he'd made it. Sabaoth might have been reading his mind. Perhaps he was.
I expected you long before now,
he said reproachfully.
Yes, sir,
Luke said.
I'm sorry. Circumstances lately have been rather out of my control.
Why?
Sabaoth countered. The question took Luke by surprise.
I don't understand. The other's eyes narrowed slightly.
What do you mean you don't understand?
He demanded.
Are you or are you not a Jedi?
Well, yes.
Then you should be in control,
Sabaoth said firmly.
In control of yourself, in control of the people and events around you. Always.
Yes, Master,
Luke said cautiously, trying to hide his confusion. The only other Jedi Master he'd ever known had been Yoda, but Yoda had never talked like this. For another moment, Sabaoth seemed to study him. Then, abruptly, the hardness in his face vanished.
But you've come,
he said, the lines in his face shifting as he smiled.
That's the important thing. They weren't able to stop you.
No, Luke said. They tried, though. I must have gone through 4 Imperial attacks since I first started out this way.
Sabaoth looked at him sharply.
Did you now? Were they directed specifically at you?
One of them was, Luke said. For the others, I just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. Or maybe the right place at the right time, he corrected.
The sharp look faded from Sabaoth's face, replaced by something distant.
Yes,
he murmured,
gazing into the distance toward the edge of the cliff and the ring-shaped lake far below.
The wrong place at the wrong time. The epitaph of so many Jedi.
He looked back at Luke.
The Empire destroyed them, you know.
Yes, I know, Luke said. They were hunted down by the Emperor and Darth Vader.
And one or two other dark Jedi with them,
Sabaoth said grimly. His gaze turned inward.
Dark Jedi like Vader. I fought the last of them on...
He broke off, shaking his head slowly.
So long ago.
Luke nodded uncomfortably, feeling as if he was standing in loose sand. All these strange topic and mood shifts were hard to follow. A result of Sabaoth's isolation? Or was this another test? This time of Luke's patience?
A long time ago, he agreed. But the Jedi can live again. We have a chance to rebuild.
Sabaoth's attention returned to him.
Your sister,
he said.
Yes. She'll be giving birth to Jedi twins soon.
Potential Jedi, anyway,
Luke said, a little surprised that Sabaoth had heard about Leia's pregnancy. The New Republic's publicists had given the news wide dissemination, but he'd have thought Jomark too far out of the mainstream to have picked up on it.
The twins are the reason I came here, in fact.
No,
Sabaoth said.
The reason you came here was because I called you.
Well, yes, but...
There are no buts, Jedi Skywalker.
Sabaoth cut him off sharply.
To be a Jedi is to be a servant of the Force. I called you through the Force, and when the Force calls, you must obey.
I understand.
Luke nodded again, wishing that he really did. Was Sabaoth just being figurative? Or was this yet another topic his training had skipped over? He was familiar enough with the general controlling aspects of the Force, They were what kept him alive every time he matched his lightsaber against blaster fire. But a literal call was something else entirely.
When you say the Force calls you, Master Sabaoth, do you mean...
There are two reasons why I called you,
Sabaoth interrupted him again.
First, to complete your training. And second, because I need your help.
Luke blinked. My help? Sabaoth smiled wanly, his eyes suddenly very tired.
I am nearing the end of my life, Jedi Skywalker. Soon now, I will be making that long journey from this life to what lies beyond.
A lump caught in Luke's throat.
I'm sorry,
was all he could think to say.
It's the way of all life,
Sabaoth shrugged.
For Jedi, as well as for lesser beings.
Luke's memory flicked back to Yoda, lying on his deathbed in his Dagobah home, and his own feeling of helplessness that he could do nothing but watch. It was not an experience he really wanted to go through again.
How can I help?
He asked quietly.
By learning from me,
Sabaoth said.
Open yourself to me. Absorb from me my wisdom and experience and power. In this way you will carry on my life and work.
I see,
Luke nodded, wondering exactly what work the other was referring to.
You understand, though, that I have work of my own to do.
And are you prepared to do it?
Sabaoth said, arching his eyebrows.
Fully prepared? Or did you come here with nothing to ask of me?
Well, actually, yes, Luke had to admit. I came on behalf of the New Republic, to ask your assistance in the fight against the Empire.
To what end?
Luke frowned. He'd have thought the reason self-evident. The elimination of the Empire's tyranny. The establishment of freedom and justice for all the beings of the galaxy.
Justice?
Sabaoth's lip twisted.
Do not look to lesser beings for justice, Jedi Skywalker.
He slapped himself twice on the chest, two quick movements of his fingertips.
We are the true justice of this galaxy. We too, and the new legacy of Jedi that we will forge to follow us. Leave the petty battles to others, and prepare yourself for that future.
I...
Luke floundered, searching for a response to that.
What is it your sister's unborn twins need?
Sabaoth demanded.
They need... Well, they're someday going to need a teacher,
Luke told him, the words coming out with a strange reluctance. First impressions were always dicey, he knew. But right now, he wasn't at all sure that this was the sort of man he wanted to be teaching his niece and nephew. Sabaoth seemed to be too mercurial, almost on the edge of instability.
It's sort of been assumed that I'd be teaching them when they're old enough, like I'm teaching Leia. The problem is that just being a Jedi doesn't necessarily mean you can be a good teacher.
He hesitated.
Obi-Wan Kenobi blamed himself for Vader's turn to the dark side. I don't want that to happen to Leia's children. I thought maybe you could teach me the proper methods of Jedi instruction.
A waste of time,
Sabaoth said with an offhanded shrug.
Bring them here. I'll teach them myself.
Yes, Master, Luke said, picking his words carefully. I appreciate the offer, but as you said, you have your own work to do. All I really need are some pointers.
And what of you, Jedi Skywalker?
Sabaoth interrupted him again.
Have you yourself no need of further instruction? In matters of judgment, perhaps?
Luke gritted his teeth. This whole conversation was leaving him feeling a lot more transparent than he really liked.
Yes, I could use some more instruction in that area, he conceded.
I think sometimes that the Jedi Master who taught me expected me to pick that up on my own.
It's merely a matter of listening to the Force,
Sabaoth said briskly. For a moment his eyes seemed to unfocus. Then they came back again.
But come, we will go down.